I'm thrilled to be speaking with a member of the Artemis Quartet, one of the world's finest working ensembles today, visiting Kalamazoo on Saturday, April 7th at 7:30 p.m. to perform in Stetson Chapel. And on the line here, I have violist Gregor Siegel. So nice to be able to talk to you before this concert.
Yes, my pleasure. Hello.
Hello. Would you talk about the tour the group is making to North America?
We always struggle because we love traveling to the States, and they are just, it's such a big country, and there's so many venues that we would love to visit every time we come. But on the other hand, most of us have little kids at home, and every day away from home is heartache. So we always kind of, we have to decide what to do. So we try to pack as many concerts as possible into something like a two-week period. And then of course, unfortunately, there are so many places that we cannot visit regularly or only in so many years passing till we return. And I believe, if I'm not mistaken, the last time we visited Kalamazoo was in 2008.
Will you be visiting any major cities on this tour besides Kalamazoo?
Well, our tour will start in Princeton, which is very exciting. It's always such a pleasure to visit that incredible institution. And then we will be in Washington at the Library of Congress. We will be in New York at Carnegie, and we will then be in Houston and San Francisco. And at the end of the tour, we will spend a couple of days in the San Francisco Bay Area, which will be wonderful for us to stay in the same hotel for a couple of nights and visit the towns around it. We will play in Walnut Creek and Palo Alto, and then end the tour in the beautiful Napa Valley. And from there, it's back home to Berlin.
And isn't your second violinist, Anthea Creston, she was living on the West Coast of the United States before she joined the Artemis Quartet. Is that correct?
Yes, that's correct. Yeah, Anthea lived on the West Coast, and she did a very adventurous thing. She moved to Berlin with her family to join our quartet. And yes, but she's an American girl, born in Chicago. And of course, for her, a tour to the States is very exciting. It's coming home for her.
Mm-hmm. That was a couple of years ago. And she seems to have committed completely to the quartet life. Was it a discussion when you thought of inviting her to join, whether you should invite someone who came from so far away and even culturally grew up, in a different set of surroundings?
Yes, certainly. That was a big discussion because, of course, we felt an enormous responsibility inviting her because we knew what it means to bring a family with little kids and to change location and to travel somewhere so far away. And of course, that is not an easy thing to do, to mix these two cultures, but it's enriching and it's very interesting. And also, it's good to see that music connects, and the musical language is international. So basically, on the musical level, there are no problems. So that has worked from the very beginning. Also, the Artemis Quartet, the early Artemis Quartet, and Anthea Creston shared the same teachers. They studied with the Emerson Quartet and the Juliet Quartet and the LaSalle Quartet. So the education is not that different.
Shared teaching parents, as it were.
Yes, that's right.
When Anthea joined Artemis, you moved from being a violinist to a violist, I understand.
Yes, that's right.
That sounds extraordinary to me. Had you kept up your viola playing during the time you were playing as a violinist?
Yes, I have always felt a strong connection to the viola. I'm a big guy. somehow the instrument suits me. And I love the sound, and for me it was, an incredible task, of course, to switch to the viola, but I think the secret is in the sound and in listening to your own sound. Of course, the playing technique is basically the same than on violin, but you have to, of course, listen carefully to what you're actually doing in order to not sound like a violinist on a viola, but sound like a violist on a viola. And it has to do with the pressure of the bow, the speed of the bow, the speed and size of vibrato. And of course, a viola, longer strings and a bigger body need more time and need to be treated differently. So, and besides from that, of course, it's such a privilege to be able to play in such a quartet on different positions, because you get an entirely new view on all those masterpieces that you thought you knew, but seeing them from an entirely different perspective is just astonishing. It's astonishing what you can still discover.
That was my next question about how it must be to take a very familiar piece you know through and through as a violinist and suddenly be sitting one seat over, and it's completely a new perspective. Yeah,
it is a new perspective, and it's so interesting because, of course, I know the other voices, and you study them and you hear them, but playing them yourself is still different. And you also get a good sense of balance and even more understanding of how to balance the voices and how to emphasize the leading voices. And I've been lucky enough to play the first and second and viola in the Artemis Quartet. So I'm thinking of starting to learn the cello to get a complete overview.
It's easier said than done, I think.
Yes. No, I think it will just be said, not done.
Well, let's talk about the program for the concert on Saturday in Stetson Chapel. You begin with one of the Beethoven Opus 18 quartets. I remember that his Opus 18 was his very first published set of string quartets, and they are remarkable in that he's very much Beethoven, and yet young Beethoven with the influence of Mozart and Haydn quite present, I think, in these works.
Yes, most certainly the influence of Mozart and Haydn. I mean, these pieces are so incredibly well written, and especially the 18-3 is so transparent and so well balanced, which also makes it extremely difficult to play. Everything is so obvious, and also everything going wrong is very obvious. But this is a very special quartet. It's actually my favorite of the Opus 18 quartets. It's the first one he wrote, although it's 1803, it's the first quartet he wrote, and it's probably the most springtime loving music in his chamber music works. For us, it's a we always put this piece in the beginning of a concert, and you know, when you travel a lot and you play in a different hall every night, the beginning of a concert is always very, very hard to do. And for us, arriving at the second movement of the 1803 is always a bit like a magic moment, because that's when we have found our balance in the new hall, and Beethoven shifts to B flat major, and that's the moment when we usually feel that we can start to blend our four voices and really become one voice after the stress of the first movement. So that's always a great moment for us.
I'm glad you said spring-like, because in Stetson Chapel, it's a very simple layout. There are pews and there are big, tall windows on either side of the chapel. And at 7:30 p.m. in an early April, we'll be seeing a beautiful sunset and
wonderful.
Getting a sense of the spring as the Beethoven begins. And we really need spring here. It's been a pretty cold and rough winter. I understand, though, over in parts of Europe, the freeze has been extreme as well.
Yes, it has been a weird winter season. And still now, you always think spring is there. But this morning, I went to the U.S. Embassy to check on my visa, and a huge snowstorm started, and I was freezing and couldn't see anything, and there was chaos on the street. So it's not really there yet, but we are hoping.
Let's talk a little bit about Béla Bartók's quartet number 2 in A minor. I queued this up on YouTube, actually, because I could watch the scroll of the manuscript. I could see the music and hear it play a little bit. And it sure opened my eyes to some things about Bartók. Mainly because without the music, I get lost in just the mood. I can't tell how he's achieving what he achieves, and how all of you play together in music that moves in such mysterious ways to my ears.
Yes, I understand what you mean, and we have the same feeling. I mean, the language, the musical language of Bartók is a foreign language to me. It's just as foreign as the Hungarian language is. It's such a different rhythm and such a different intonation and phrasing. And you have to get into this music and study it and spend a lot of time with it to understand it. It then becomes incredible and absolutely genius music, but it takes a while. And I can only recommend to everyone to take that time and try to get into it a bit. we have played this second Bartok quartet a lot in recent weeks, and it has been an extraordinary experience seeing that a lot of audience members are deeply moved and, if not deeply disturbed by that music, because Bartok wrote it during the First World War, between 1915 and 1917, he wrote that quartet. And in a way, it has such incredibly dark moments. Also for me, performing it, it's sometimes really shattering, and it's so up to date, that feeling of being helpless and powerless, and that fear of war and terror and closing borders and problems all around. That is, it touches people a lot, and people realize that it's exactly what they are thinking about in our times as well. And you can realize that Bartok suffered a lot, and looking around and seeing all these problems, and also for his work, he used to travel so much to discover and study the folk music around the country, and suddenly all the borders were closed. He couldn't travel. He felt like a prisoner. And it was when we started to study that quartet, I read a wonderful sentence that Bartok wrote to a friend. And he said, it seems that the muses are not silent in modern war. So he still managed to express in music, and he still managed to go on, and he realized that music was still written and played, and that's something so important for us musicians, that whatever happens, our work can always continue in a way. And it's a very, very strong piece, really. And we always place it as a second piece before the break, and a lot of feedback from audience members was that they had long discussions during the break, and we're happy to return to the concert and not go home after that Bartok, but return to the concert and have some more music.
Yes. If there were no break, I like the way the Bartok speaks to the Schumann, and the Schumann returns a little something to the Bartok. Not only do they share a key center, but they're probably about 60 or 70 years apart, perhaps. Really not that long. The language is quite different, but there is great emotion in Schumann's Opus 41, number one, and a bit of like helpless emotion too. I think he's a bit overcome in some ways at certain parts. So that's my take on it anyway.
Yes, absolutely right. I mean, Schumann's emotions are just so overwhelming. And we know about his illness, and we know that he he had these ups and downs, not like normal people have them, but just extremely strong. And so when he expresses love, it's just overwhelming. And then, but then you feel that he falls so deep. And that's really incredibly touching. And he wrote all his string quartets in one summer, basically. You can call it a honeymoon, or almost a honeymoon. And he was so overwhelmed with the love to Clara. And, of course, all his quartets express the love to her. And but you mentioned the helplessness, and he was a bit helpless. He could not, he felt that he cannot control himself, and he felt that he cannot handle his emotions, and he suffered, of course. Clara was constantly traveling. She was a celebrated piano virtuoso, and that was actually what he wanted to do. His dream was to be a great piano virtuoso, and that never really happened. And so I'm sure that was also something that he struggled with, seeing his beloved Clara being away and performing and being at home and not knowing, what to do with all this emotion. I'm sure he felt lonely quite a lot, because I think when you're such an extreme character, and it's hard to share emotions with others, and it's hard to express these ups and downs.
Well, I hope that in Kalamazoo you feel at home in Stetson Chapel when you visit, and I'm so happy that you'll be bringing such an incredible program to our town. It's been terrific to talk to you, Mr. Siegel, and all the best on your travels.
Thank you so much. I'm looking forward. Thank you.